Katie.
I'm Erica.
And this is Book Talk.
Hi, Katie.
Hi, Erica.
Welcome to Book Talk, your weekly podcast book club. This is the second section of Lessons in Chemistry. Katie, what did we just read?
Erica, a lot happened in this section. We start this section going back in time to Calvin being a young boy in school and finding out that potentially his dad was sending textbooks and money to the like boarding school orphanage situation that he's living at, but never coming back to actually adopt him. And they don't let him have really any contact with him, which I think sets us up for all the issues Calvin has kind of later in life. Go back to present day. Elizabeth and Calvin are living together and their dog 630. A new ordinance comes in the town that there's a leash law for the dog, so she gets 630 a leash. Literally a day later, Calvin is running to work. A police car loudly backfires. He and the dog slip and freak out, and because they're connected by this leash, Calvin smashes his head and dies. I was shook reading this part. Elizabeth is understandably distraught, and then she finds out immediately after that she's pregnant. I cannot imagine a worse series of events here. She is then fired on the basis that she's pregnant. She's like, whatever, screw you. She builds a laboratory inside her house and essentially starts a consulting business to help all the men that she works with. She finally sees a doctor and then has the little baby and then is again distraught in like, how do I raise this crying, screaming thing? She, thank God, meets her neighbor, Harriet, finally somebody who can help her, offer some advice on keeping this child alive and keeping some of her sanity. And that is where we end. I was seriously reading this book before bed being like, it's kind of like a rom-com. I feel like we're having a lot of deep conversations. They're like settling into this like lovely little life together. And then I literally read the sentence. It was like 37 minutes later, he was dead and my jaw dropped.
Same. And I also reread it because I was like, the dog or the man? Who's about to die?
Yeah, I was shocked. It was Calvin. I was like, that was such a short amount of time we got to know him. And he literally died. I could not believe it.
That was really surprising. And because we both were under the assumption that this love story was going to sort of carry us through the whole book.
Yeah.
Clearly not the case. Although maybe now it's the love story between Elizabeth and her daughter.
Or Elizabeth and Harriet, her new BFF.
Oh, hello. Ooh.
Ooh. But like, I feel like maybe the story is of the friendship or of the mother-daughter relationship or of Elizabeth finding herself. But I did think like at some point she was going to be mad at Calvin. And like she got pregnant or something happened and she was going to break up with him. But it seems like the contraception just like truly did not work. And the reason she's a single mom is truly not by her choice. It's also frustrating because if Calvin was still alive and she was pregnant, she probably would have got to keep her lab and her status because he was so well known and had such clout at Hastings. He could basically get her whatever she wanted. And she is just like thrown out as soon as he is gone. They're like, sorry, you can't ride his coattails. Ugh, that whole conversation was extremely frustrating to read.
I also have a little bit of a bone to pick with you, Katie. Liar, liar, pants on fire. You said that her daughter's name was Madeline Evans. It's Madeline Zott. So Calvin is out of the picture with this baby girl. Just saying.
Can I just look and see?
It is. I just checked.
But did I just misread that?
Yep. Caught red-handed.
Well, shit. Sorry to all my fans and lovers. My bad.
That's okay. It's for the best because otherwise we would have thought they're definitely breaking up, whatever. This was still really surprising that he died so quickly into the book.
Yeah. But I think it does firmly place this, unless we get another big love story, out of the typical like chick lit genre, which is kind of nice. Like this story is truly, I think, now going to be about Elizabeth finding who she is in the world without this person that she loved. And also like, you know, she kind of questioning her choices already. She's like, why would Madeline look up to me? Like, look what has happened to me. And she's kind of going to have to come to terms with that and then, you know, find herself again.
Yeah. The number one villain who I would love to throw hands at is this Frask lady who was incredibly mean to her. I could not. The coattails.
Unnecessarily mean.
But again, women do this to each other all the time. She's actually mad at Elizabeth because Elizabeth is beautiful and the person that Frask loves has a crush on her. And so, again, this is like, she's mad at the wrong person, but women do this all the time.
Yes, absolutely. Women are always tearing each other down. I feel like instead of at anger that is misdirected towards each other, it just is extremely frustrating. She was so mean to her.
I still to this day remember getting in an argument with my high school boyfriend who had a crush on Kim Kardashian. And I was like tearing down Kim Kardashian because he had a crush on her. And in hindsight, it is literally the stupidest thing in the world because first of all, I have a crush on Kim Kardashian. And second of all, it's not like he was ever going to meet her and date her. Like, why did I feel threatened by her? But it was just like, that's just how you're taught to do, is to compete with each other for the attention of a man.
Ooh, we hate that. I think Elizabeth is dealing with a lot of that kind of like beauty bias situation from her neighbors, from women that she works with. But she is, I think, hilarious and such an interesting main character. Like, I love that she just rips out her whole kitchen and puts in a laboratory. She is constantly baffled that people are like holding her back or questioning her. And she just like does not mince words. She's like, I don't understand. You were literally, would you do this as a man? Like, she's constantly questioning everything around her, and she's never getting like emotional or upset about it. She's just truly like, this is not logical, and I don't understand where you're coming from. But I think she's funny.
I would love her to be my friend and also to advocate for me, because I feel like I start crying immediately, and if I speak up for myself, I'm very likely to say sorry, but also just if you want to, but if not, it's okay, no worries.
I feel like we literally just had this discussion. Same. She's like, this is what you're gonna give me and this is why, and I'm like, okay, but that's fine, but if you don't want to do it, then like also don't worry about it. I'll just like, it's no big deal
or whatever. LOL.
Yikes. But I think the being a mom thing is kind of rocking her world, because she is really good at a lot of things. And when people put her down, she still has this kind of built-in self-confidence about her science and about who she is as a person, where they can't really shake her, right? She knows that at the end of the day, she knows what she's doing, and it's society around her that doesn't respect it. But I think when she has this baby, she's like, holy shit, I do not know what I'm doing, and this thing is not doing well.
Right. She says the line to Harriet that, well, I've tried to make a schedule for the baby, but like the baby's not adhering to the schedule. Which is like, hello, I've made a procedure. I've made a lab protocol for when you're supposed to eat and sleep and shit and bathe and all these things. And like the baby is not conforming to this.
Right.
Which I would imagine is how every baby is. They're like, we don't care about your plans.
Right. She's like, wait a minute, I fed you. And then you're like, guess what? I'm hungry again. And she's like, you just ate. And she's like, well, I don't remember. Yeah. Obviously, the baby's not saying these things. But I thought it was hilarious, because I feel like so many new moms are like, you have to kind of let them. Some, there's different parenting philosophies, obviously. But I feel like one of them is like the cry it out one, which is like, if all of the needs are met, if you are warm and fed and your diaper is changed and you're in a safe place, then like, you might just be crying. So it's like, there might not be a logical answer to it either. And that is going to, I think, really frustrate her as she tries to raise a child, because it's a lot less logic than science.
Once again, also me. Sometimes I'm just crying. There's no reason.
Oh my God. Okay, I have to talk about the all-star of this chapter, which is this dog 630, and I am obsessed with this talking, thinking, reading kind of dog. What do you think of him and this character?
I thought this whole section was strange. I don't like being in the dog's head. It's weird that, like, the dog is the only one that's, like, in Elizabeth's life. And then the doctor's like, oh, you have a dog. Okay, that's fine. Not as, like, a dog is another thing you have to take care of. I thought it was just very strange. I get that we anthropomorphize our animals, but
what does that word mean?
Like, you give them a whole personality and all this thought and emotion that's human, that you sort of project onto animals that you love. I get that, but at the same time, I find it very strange.
I think it is precious and adorable. I'm obsessed with 630. I think his character is so cute. They're talking about naming Mad, and he says, a name defines a person, or in his case, a dog. It was a personal flag, one waved the rest of his life. It had to be right. like his name, which he had to wait more than a year to receive. 6:30. Does it get any better than that? He's just like so optimistic and so happy. I love it. I feel like I'm not sure yet what the point of including this dog and his internal monologues is, but I do feel like he obviously is a rock for Elizabeth and adores her and gives her this comfort that she obviously also gives him. And so I don't know what the end feeling of that is, but I just want to say that I love it.
Well, I'm glad one of us does.
As a fellow dog lover, I love it.
I also love dogs. I just didn't expect it. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Maybe you should get one, another one. That might help.
Oh, thanks. Great. Mm-hmm. The other character, so there are two characters that come to Elizabeth's aid in this section. The first is when she finally goes to see Dr. Mason. So Dr. Mason is someone who also rowed with her, like was also in her rowing team, not the coach.
No, he was just also on the team as well. His name's mentioned a couple of times in the beginning.
Okay, I couldn't remember.
I looked back.
What did you think about their interaction?
I feel like he actually saw and respected Elizabeth more so than a lot of people, especially men in her life, have up until this point. And he doesn't really shame her for her decisions or her thought. And I think he's pretty encouraging. I think it was like refreshing his character coming in. Obviously, like he's not perfect either, but I think that he was a breath of fresh air with all the awful people who do not respect her as a woman or a mom or a scientist that this man does. And I think there is something to be said for the bond when you see people in different circumstances. Like she says that Calvin always said there's like a special bond between people who row together. And that's probably because you're doing something really physically hard where you have to depend on other people, regardless of who they are. Irregardless is not a word. I'm so sorry. Regardless of who they are or what their gender is or what they're doing, you have to trust them that they're going to do it with you. And I think that does build something. I'm feeling really philosophical today about this book. I don't know why. What did you think about that?
I do think he's one of the first men in the book, besides Calvin, to see her and to appreciate her for her competence, which she has. She's very, very competent. And also to recognize that she's in a very unique position and that there's no point in drawing attention to the very unique position that she's in because she knows. So in the end where he's like, oh, well, yeah, you have a dog and you're like practicing your rowing. Great. So I think it'll be fine. And I think that was a kindness on his part to be like, oh, good. Okay. You got this. And like, look how strong you are. You made it through the labor and delivery without an epidural. So I like him for what he gave her, but I do like Harriet better, who's the second person who emerges to really help her through this difficult time. So you think Harriet is a potential love interest?
Oh no, I was joking. Like, love story might be the friendship. Like the love story might not be a romantic love. It might be like the falling in friendship love. I mean, she could be a love interest, but I don't think Harriet doesn't seem like she's really a babe in this section. So I feel like it's not going to happen for her. But I meant like the love story of their friendship. I think that Harriet is pretty lonely and she also has something Elizabeth needs, which is like companionship and knowledge. So what did you think about number one, their interactions, but number two, Harriet's monologue about her disgusting husband? I need to know your opinion on both.
Ew, disgusting. That's how I feel about her husband. Yeah, gross. The hairs all over her house? No. No.
Rubbing his belly while being like, would you look at that?
Harriet, honey. Oof. Hate that. Hate that for her. But I also like that Elizabeth calls her like a realistic priest. Like she has this like really good sage advice. Which I did find her advice actually very helpful, which is take a second every day, find something that supports you, that nourishes you, that you love, and then like, then take a deep breath and get back, like recommit to the role that you have to do and the things that you have to accomplish. I think we can all apply that. But I also love that she was like, I've never taken this advice. And also she was like, I hate when people do this, so I'm not going to give you advice. And then finally, Elizabeth's like, no, actually, I want to know. Please tell me your advice after all these people have given her all this unsolicited advice, which I'm sure happens to moms and pregnant women and pregnant people constantly.
Correct. I think, yeah, Harriet is very funny in this section, and she's trying not to like overstep her bounds, but she's also like, all right, this woman is clearly struggling. Like, could I help her? And I think on some level, she's like, all right, let me reach out to do it. And then she sits at home and just waits for Elizabeth to reach out. And you see it kind of from both sides. Elizabeth's like almost calling her, but then like probably doesn't want to bother her, doesn't want to seem weak, so she doesn't. And they just go back and forth. And eventually she calls and she's like, Harriet, she's like, I'm coming over right now.
She saw her picking up the phone through her binoculars.
That's so creepy. She should not leave those with Mr. Sloan, truly.
Ew, gross.
Well?
I do like that this book has so much of a world to it. I feel maybe this isn't fair, but some books that you read just are very shallow. The world is shallow. There's like three characters, and like the whole story is about these three people. Sorry, I'm looking at Colleen Hoover books, but that's how I feel. It's like, oh, you are like a very kind of two-dimensional person in a very two-dimensional world. And this is like, I feel like I understand the neighborhood they live in. I understand like the full scope of the lab with like the admins and the secretaries and the like professors and, you know, the funding group and like the funders who are coming in. And there's just so much richness to this story that you feel like you can really actually get lost in this world, and it feels like this is a real kind of story. And maybe that's where the dog part threw me for a loop, because up until that point I was like, this is historical, like she might be real, you know. And then the dog is like nudging a book of Foucault to her, and I'm like, okay, now it's not so real.
I agree. I think it seems very real, but I liked the little moments of magical realism that I think make a little bit of the story a little bit lighter.
A little whimsy.
A little whimsical, because a lot of it is pretty heavy. The topics are pretty heavy, and I think that 630 is that lightness that you kind of need to be able to read and appreciate the harder parts of it. I still am not sure what the like main tension is going to be from this point.
Well, now I'm just assuming it's the baby.
Okay.
It's, like she has no child. Career. She doesn't have any money. She doesn't really have that much support. And she has a newborn. So how do we get from there to her being on a famous talk show and or her creating a famous talk show and taking care of her daughter and establishing herself? I think that's where we're going to go.
I think we got a slight little glimpse of that when she makes coffee in a beaker with like a piece of copper or some wild shit she used to make coffee. Like, did she just invent a percolator? What's going on?
And then Harriet's like, this is the best damn cup of coffee I've ever had.
So she did invent a percolator.
Delicious.
I was pretty jealous. Sounded great.
But yeah, I guess there's no additional tension other than that at the current moment. But there could be more. I mean, we'll see what happens.
Agreed.
I'm assuming also there's foreshadowing at the first chapter that she has this job making food, but she doesn't love it. So she's not happy with what she has to do to survive, and like not happy with fame, most likely, probably not happy with people thinking of her as just a home cook. And right, that maybe also will be where the tension emerges.
I just can't wait to see how this wraps up and ends, like what her journey, what this journey of hers in this career and with this baby ends up looking like.
Well, you're going to have to wait an extra week because we're reading this book over 5 episodes, not 4. So sorry, we're delaying your gratification even longer.
But I feel like it's just more richness we get to read about in this book because it's just a little bit longer than we normally do.
It's longer, and each page, I feel like there's a lot happening. So I feel like we need it. We need the space.
I was on an airplane this weekend, and this lady next to me pulled out this book and started reading it. And I was like, oh, I'm reading that book too. She's like, you are? Oh my gosh. She's like, it's so good. She had like 30 pages left. She was like, well, if I finish it, I'll give it to you. You can just pick up wherever you're at in the book because I'm about to be done. I was like, oh my God, thank you. And then like later when she was getting off the plane, she's watching a movie, and she's the lady's probably like 70. She reaches over and she's like, have you seen the movie Me Before You? And I was like, no. And she's like, well, I just feel like we have similar tastes and it's meant to be. So you should watch it. It's very sad. I was like, okay.
So cute. Okay, well, can't wait to see what happens in the next section. We say that every time, but it's true.
At least this time I didn't say see you next week, because I'll
see you next week.
Ew.
Well, as we talked about on last week's episode, I was not loving the book that I was currently reading, so I burned it. Kidding. I picked up instead Carrie Soto Is Back, which is a new TJR book. And of course, I mean, as is the case with every TJR book, it's so good. And it's about tennis, which I
love.
What
is TJR? Oh, Taylor Jenkins Reid.
Yep. Yep. She, again, another master of the plot. It's a whole entire world and it's a saga. And every chapter is like years in this woman's career. And I just can't even believe like the amount of time that we have traversed to get to like the start of this book, basically. So the story is about this tennis player who was a phenom, won all these slams, and then her knee was hurting. She sort of like fell out of competition. She was older, so she retired. And then 10 years later, she's watching as this new up-and-coming tennis star is approaching her record. And she decides to come back and have like a comeback tour to basically hold her record for the number of slams that she won. And so that's sort of then. So you start there and then you go all the way back to growing up, how she became a tennis star, how she originally made this outstanding record, and then why she originally retired. So that's like 120 pages. And it's just like years and years and years are passing, and you learn all these characters and all this setup. It's amazing. I can't wait to keep reading. I love her. I love her stuff.
Oh my gosh.
That's how I feel about it.
I picked up that book in the airport, and then I was like, is this a story that's already been told? Like, something about it reminded me of like Serena Williams' story, or like, I was like, is this a book I've already read? So I wasn't sure if I wanted to read it, so I didn't buy it, but I'm glad to hear that you're loving it. Maybe I'll read it next.
It's just very absorbing. I think she's all plot and not a lot of reflection or more of that like emotional depth. So I think that's where she gets criticized. It does feel like you're reading a movie where you're like, this is so entertaining. There's like so much going on here, okay. But she doesn't always really like digest what's going on. So I feel like people have criticized The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, and rightly so, for like ignoring some of the implications of the plot points. And that's sort of where she falls flat, is like a lot of things are happening and then that's it. And she doesn't really editorialize about what those points mean in a broader sense.
That makes sense. I do think that's the criticism I've heard, so that makes sense. Okay. Yeah. What was the book you put down that you hated?
I didn't hate it. I was reading the memoir, I'm Glad My Mom Died. I'm not a memoir person.
Oh, yeah. And then we're like, put it down, read something else. Yeah, get in the good mood. Okay. And this clearly did it for you.
Because they're always like, and then I did this, and then I did that, and then I did this other thing, and then this happened. And I'm just like, guys, I'm a fiction. I'm a fiction girly.
I'm a fiction girly unless it is someone that I'm really like interested in their life. So speaking of memoirs, I read Matthew Perry's memoir, which
is like an hour.
Yeah, on a plane. Friends, Lovers, and the Big Terrible Thing. In 4 hours, but I mean on 2 2-hour plane rides. Friends, Lovers, and the Big Terrible Thing. I love Friends. It is like my comfort show, and I don't care what anybody has to say about it. So whatever, but I do love it. So I was interested. I don't really know anything about a lot of the characters' lives. I've never been like a pop culture girly, so I really didn't know anything about it. But it was like very eye-opening to read Matthew Perry's memoir. I think it was a really good, obviously it's a truthful and like very raw look at somebody who's struggling deeply with addiction. And a lot about like the emotional whys behind how he ended up in the situations that he ended up in. So I do think it was like Matthew Perry answering the question, like, is he okay? Which people who are in the show with him say they're constantly being asked by everybody. And this is kind of his answer to that question. I think the answer is probably no, but like it was stressful to read. And even in this last section, like he's only sober for a couple of years. Even now, he's had some serious medical traumas because of his addictions, and then a lot of struggles because of it, but also a lot of success beyond that. And he has kind of like reset now, I think, what his purpose is, which is like to maybe help somebody else who's feeling the way that he did. And he feels very like strongly about that purpose. So I think it ended on a good note. Like addiction itself, it felt pretty repetitive in the beginning. Like he was like getting better, anything would happen, he would fall back into the addiction, he would get better. You know, it was just like, after like 200 pages, I was like, okay, what's happening here? But that is also his life. You're like, how did this man survive this much? It's like shocking. Shocking. At one point he was taking like just 55 pills a day.
Ooh, okay. So it was drugs and alcohol or just drugs? Or
yeah,
just
he's mostly alcohol? Mostly it's always starts with alcohol. I think it's alcohol and opioids. So
ooh.
But, yeah. And then I'm reading The Invisible Husband of Frick Island by Colleen Oakley, which is like a cute little summer read. I think it is cute. It's fun to read. It's like a very good night while everything else is stressful book. It's about this girl, Piper, whose husband is a fisherman. They're on like a small island in the Chesapeake Bay. He dies in a boating accident. She's like distraught. 4 days later, she wakes up and she's like, oh, Tom's back. Thank God. That was like a nightmare. But he's not back. He's dead. And she's just like either having like a psychotic break or she's like seeing him. But she's walking around town, introducing him to people and like acting like he's still there. And this little town loves her so much that they all just like agree that they'll also pretend so that she doesn't have to like go through the grief. And so they like greet her and they're like, hey, Piper. Hey, Tom. Your usual table. And they like cook him breakfast too, even though he doesn't eat it. It's like they're all just going. And then they kind of realize they're too far in. And they're like, what are we going to do? And this outside reporter comes on and is like witnessing this from an outside perspective. And he's like, are y'all crazy? But I think it's like a good, I don't know how it's going to end yet, but it is like, it does transport you to this tiny little island in like a beautiful time of year with this kind of crazy story. And also this community that like clearly loves this girl and wants her to be okay. So it's cute.
Nice.
Cool.
Cool.
Like I'm reading something else. Oh, I'm not. That's it.
Okay. Well, cool. Now for real. See you next week.
Okay. I'll for real see you next week.
Okay. For real. Bye.
For real. For real. Bye.
'Book Talk is made by me, Erica Bailey, and Katie Cheney, with production support from Dan White. Our theme music is by Dan White. We'll see you next week.
And then I was like, do you listen to podcasts? I have a podcast. And she was like, no.